I'm Rudy Roe Dallaflo Bigliani, along with my partner Telly TJ Vangeli. This is Cross Vegas. After years of sowing seeds of faith as up-and-coming televangelists, TJ and I crashed into our new endeavor of being social mediators for the kingdom right here in Las Vegas. We're demonstrating the blessing that he wants for you in our latest project of prosperity at Cross Vegas. Come join us as we bring the redemption of riches to the Sin City. Remember, what happens here stays in heaven.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Has anyone ever told you your DVDs are worthless? Guess what? They're not, and neither are you. Hi, I'm Davey D. Williams, founder and CEO of Dignity VD, and I'm offering you an honest appraisal of your digital video disc entertainment technology. Have you ever gone to a garage sale hoping to spend your hard-earned dollar only to leave confused, thrilled, and guilty for fleecing a young homeowner in your adjacent neighborhood who was offering DVDs at four for a dollar?
But this copy of Life of Pi has never been opened.
There's no shame. With Dignity VD, one man's trash is another man's copy of Major League 2 Director's Cut. For a low, convenient, and memorable price of $1 per disc, we will give you a certified appraisal of the video disc collection you've been slowly accumulating for the purpose of convincing your future great-grandchildren that your house is the cool place to chill.
Jumanji and RV in one convenient box? Yes, sir.
So keep perusing those riches, you DVD diva.
This box is too deep for my arms to reach.
Climb back on that jazzy and make a beeline for those circular digital cinema wonders in the $2.99 Walmart bin.
Would you kindly tell me if this is the old Charlie and the Wonka Factory or the new one?
And now, for a limited time, we will also expand our services to your VHS collection, cassette collection, and Laserdisc. Dignity VD, part of the Lifesteal family of services and schemes.
Well, they say this new technology makes me younger, but all I've gotten is more remotes for Wendell to figure out.
Well, hello there, dear listeners, wherever you may be across these fruited plains. Welcome to Cross Vegas. We are here in the city of brotherly love, and I'm here with my brother that I love, Brother TJ. How are you this fine day?
Rudy, it is a wonderful day in the city. You may hear from the background noise, people are water skiing in their infinity pools, they are leaf blowing their rock garden lawns. It is the time of year that we love here, and that is the mid-fall.
Mid-fall Halloween time, Harvest Festival. It's incredible. I mean, I've seen a lot of things through the years, from trick-or-treating to trunk-or-treating, but my oh my, I think it's kind of gotten to a certain level where it's time for us to say what needs to be said.
Everybody among our listeners know that we've been seeing, ever since Home Depot came up with the 10-foot-tall skeleton during the pandemic, your neighbors are preaching their satanic messages at you in ever more powerful ways. And they're willing to spend the money it takes to get that message out through those decorations. And you know what? I think we've got to take a stand, Rudy. I think this is our time.
That's right. Those satanic messages are just, they're out there, they're out in front, they're just staked into people's lawns. They may not look like they're satanic, but they're shrouded in devil's clothing, actual devils. And so devils appearing as Satans, and I think that our people need to see it for what it really is.
Right. It's like some kid is dressed up as a wolf, but then you take his costume off, and he's a child werewolf underneath.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that is really wrong and unclear in terms of the rules of Halloween. There's the Christian response has been, I would say, subpar, lacking. I think it's our duty in this fine city of Las Vegas to set the record straight on Halloween.
every patriotic Amenican knows that Halloween is not so hallowed as it used to be, as in Hallowed Be Thy Name, but has become more of a hell of a ween over these last few decades. But if you want to fight the good fight against the evils of Halloween, the Bible has better wisdom for you. And Rudy, you know what passage I'm going to say. I know what passage I'm going to say, so say it with me now. Luke 11:24-26.
B.
Exactly. And let me just read that out here for our listeners. When an unpure spirit comes out of a person, it goes through arid places seeking rest and finds it not. Then it says, I will return to the house I left. And when it arrives, it finds the house swept clean and put in order. Then it goes and takes seven other spirits more wicked than itself, and they go in and live there, and the final condition of that person is worse than the first. So, Rudy, what we gotta do is rip a page right out of the Bible and plaster it up on our planning board in our main pump tent in Cross Vegas. We can't destroy Halloween to win against Satan in a straightforward way. We gotta learn from those demons and replace the blank slate with a little Halloween of our own, a biblical Halloween.
That's exactly right. A biblical Halloween, and it needs to be led by real men who are willing to face up to all this. And we don't need any more Halloweenies. We need the real men, a patriotic Amenican, in order to make this Halloween for Christians.
And we can start that on a couple of fronts. Maybe in the costumes and decorations front, in the candy front, in the haunted house front. We got lots of opportunity here. And let's just talk first about costumes. You know as well as I do that the real original American Halloween costumes were real straightforward, real manly stuff. Sailor, electrician, Indian, cowboy, police officer, motorcycle, biker, and leather chaps. Those are the real costumes that our country's built on.
Those are the costumes that we saw growing up on the TV and that we tried to emulate. Costumes that brought joy. Costumes that actually did hide people's real appearance. We didn't know who they were in that soldier outfit. And that's kind of what our the bedrock of a good American costume is right there.
You know, I think we got to bring those back, but we also have to think, what are the costumes of biblical characters that we could do? You know, what are the costumes that would have been relevant to Bible times? Angels, you know, togas, your born again birthday suit, which is the full armor of God, kind of going commando on that. There's a lot of options out there for real Christians.
Oh yeah, we can gird our loins with that full armor. And I think the angel one, or even just an old-timey, ancient Near Easterner, like you said, the big old sheet, back when everyone was just wearing a big old sheet. And we can put that on in full confidence that we're doing it in faith. There's a lot of other costumes that actually are biblical that people may not think are biblical. For example, a devil, provided that it is a devil that appears as an angel of light. So it's one of them devils that looks like a real angel, but maybe it's got some eyeshadow on it. And you look at that thing, you think, oh, there's something wrong with that thing. I think it's a biblical devil.
I like that. I like that a lot. And you know what else I've been thinking of is like, there's no pirates in the Bible. And so you're not going to go as like a skeleton pirate. I've seen that all the time. But there are angels. And, you know, why don't you consider, young people of America, going this year as an angel skeleton? Because most people don't think angels got skeletons just because they're spirits, but they got all kind of body parts in the Bible, like six wings, 10,000 eyeballs, strong vocal cords. And those thousands of eyeballs don't just hold themselves up. Every angel, this is my belief, every angel is as swole as Peter in the comic book Bible and surely has a corresponding skeleton on which to hang that mighty frame.
Oh, that's an incredible thought, you know, to read some of those descriptions of angels and imagine what if they had no flesh and just all these bones just jangling about. And that's a great picture. That'd be a great project for somebody to do for Halloween, because I like when people make their own costumes. So you better make sure you get yourself some of them bone-in or full turkeys to be able to put together all them bones on the angel skeleton.
You know, when it comes to the topic of candy, everyone knows that, you know, walking around your neighborhood, neighbors are meeting neighbors, it's nice, it's friendly, and then you think, wait a second, this is communism, the candy is free, and that is not as it should be.
That's right, we want to teach kids to earn their living. You know, we don't want them just going door to door for handouts. That is not the way, that's not the path that we want our children to be taken. So you knock on someone's door, you don't just say trick or treat like it's just something you say and then you get a candy. You need to work for that thing. And what a better way than doing a little memory verse or a sword drill.
That'd be perfect. Earning candy the way we did when we were young, which is by going to Awana and reciting some verses. You know, if these liberals are going to be shoving their free candy down your throats, at least they could be trying to do the handouts in a biblical way, which would be to crush up the candies and trust that those candies will be multiplied if the Lord has blessed that loaves and fishes covered in chocolate method that you've used there.
That's right, and we want to make sure that our kids don't get the wrong idea, that they find that manna like that you would find in the early morning dew on the ground. And if you want to do a candy scramble like that, just make sure that you're laying out that picture, that biblical picture of the way that the Lord provides. We also know that God provided with the loaves and fishes. Swedish fishes are a good one to kind of reinforce that. And you can do a great thing with the Swedish fish because they're all kind of sticky and gummy, and you can start pulling them apart. And my oh my, you take one Swedish fish, you start pulling that thing apart, and you could probably get about 10 or 12 pieces in there. That's a real good lesson for the kids.
Yeah, and it's a real object lesson. It's almost a magic trick. You know, when you're standing there and you're pulling and pulling and their kids are just staring agape at you, wondering what on earth are these hobo-looking prophets doing when they're just tearing this candy apart. Now they're handing it to me. It's so shocking that it's one of those ways where you surprise people, you scare people back into the right way of living.
And we also like the homemade gifts, just good old American-made, homemade trick-or-treat candy treats. Obviously, most of us don't know how to make the fig cakes that are described in the Bible. So I think the best we could do right now is just a nice, good old handful of raisins, and you just throw that right in their pillowcase.
Or a Ziploc bag full of pennies and apple slices. You know, I also been thinking about, what if you got Peeps left over from your Easter baskets? What if you got the four spiritual laws tract ironed onto a frosting of a Pop-Tart? You know, all of these homemade treats that Big Candy has been trying to cancel, you know, Big Candy and their cronies in City Hall trying to say, look out for razor blades, look out for trichinosis, look out for whatever. Well, the homemade treats are really where the Americana kicks in here.
Imagine the deal for some youngster, some little Joey who comes up to you with a trick-or-treat and you say, I'd love to, son, but first I'd like you to earn that by raking my lawn, raking up these leaves. And then you hit them with a homemade treat in a Ziploc bag. The story that they'll be able to tell their parents will be an incredible testimony, and I can see a whole family getting saved.
The way that you get these kids to rake your lawn like that, if you're lucky enough to live in a place that's got trees, is that you kind of form a little escrow account by taking his bag away from him till he finishes the job. He gets to learn about, you know, having a mortgage, paying taxes and all that later on with the escrow account, just through that forced, you know, indentured servitude. That's pretty brief. It's not a long period of being a slave, but just a little one.
And I'm glad you mentioned Awana before, because that's a great an illustration and connection here. So for those that are on kind of that Timothy Award track, that higher level legacy spirituality, we want to encourage kids to store up their treasures in heaven. And so when you go to that door and you get that trick-or-treater, if they could elect to store their treasures in heaven, they would be giving it back to you. You would take that candy, return it to the store, and then you would buy some of our cyber sectionals, in which you the child now is actually refusing the candy, turning it back into money, turning it into cyber sectionals, and therefore storing up their treasures in heaven. Amen.
Our cryptocurrency probably does have a lot more value in heaven for a whole variety of reasons than on earth. And, you know, if you're not sure how this works, just come by our property and we'll do this ourselves to help you learn stewardship and generosity and tithing. You can come bring your candy to us, you know, ring the little bell outside the tent, and we will exchange that candy for cyber sects.
We'll weigh it, we'll calculate it, and we'll give you back the pleasure of having that cyber sex in your name.
And these celestial cyber sectionals, you know, you just get a little public private key, you get, you know, it's the whole crypto thing we've been big on, and right now there's no exchange, but we'll talk about this later, but there's no exchange on which you can trade these back into fiat worthless currency. But right now we will give you a little token, a little code. It's going to be a 64-character alphanumeric code on a post-it note, but that will be your access to your cyber wallet.
This is a real multi-channeled approach to Halloween for our incredible testimony we want to have to the whole world. And so not only through the costumes and not only through the candy and the trick-or-treating or the lack thereof, but for really the main thing for Halloween, and that's a haunted house. A new vision of a haunted house.
Yeah, a biblical haunted house, not one of these that is all full of jump scares and you know, fake blood and you know, actors and such, but we want to amp it up. The blood of the Lamb will be real. The actors, there's no actors. The people who are possessed by demons in this haunted house actually are real possessed folks who are suffering and need a hand up. So we're reaching out and employing such people. No actors, nothing fake. And actually, the danger is very real.
Oh, yes, this is real. We're not playing around like, oh, if I just cower in the corner, everything will go away. It's not that type of haunted house. But we're trading in the tombstones for an empty tomb. We're trading in the witch on the broomstick for the witch of Endor, consulted by Saul to summon the ghost of the prophet Samuel from the bosom of Abraham. We're taking all those things that are used for bad in a haunted house, and we're going to use them for good and for real life lessons.
We talk about tombs being opened up. Now, a lot of people, you know, a lot of people just think about Jesus coming out of his tomb, but little known secret passage a couple verses earlier in the Gospels has to do with the tombs being opened up during the crucifixion and a bunch of righteous ones coming out and roaming the earth. And I think that most people don't realize that zombies are biblical. Zombies are right out of the Bible. Those guys, it's not a, you know, Restitio in pace, rest in peace kind of thing. It's a gravestone and a big hole in the ground where something climbed right up out of there, and that is a lot scarier than just seeing some tombstone, because you don't know where they are, what they're doing once something's on the loose like that.
I mean, there wasn't a proper tracking system for all them zombies that came out of the grave when Jesus was crucified, so they're most likely the ones that we find right now are actually ancestrally from that time.
And Jesus is the king of those zombies, though, so I want that to be clear. They're righteous zombies. They're not these unrighteous or sort of vegetative, you know, kind of vegetable, amoral creatures that you see in most of the movies. These are righteous zombies, and Jesus, who reigns over the living and the dead, also reigns over the undead. So I think we gotta keep that in mind when we're thinking about these these zombies who we don't know where they are, whithersoeverest they roameth and haunteth, we don't know, but the Lord knows, and he cares for them like his sheep.
That's right. They're walking by the Spirit. We know they're not walking by the flesh because their flesh is kind of dangling around and falling right off them, but they are walking by the Spirit. And it may not be the type of thing we're used to seeing on a Sunday morning, but rest assured, they are in our Christian haunted house.
Something that I like from the Bible, which is probably the scariest thing that happens in the Bible, to be honest, is the man who has the legion of demons out by the Gerasenes. And in our haunted house, what we like with him is there's kind of an escape room where you have to perform the exorcism that Jesus did before the guy breaks through his chains and gets you. That's kind of the principle there. Like if you don't do the exorcism right, he is moments away from pulling his chains out of the wall and doing whatever, you know, a real possessed person would do to you, not just one of these actors who wouldn't know what to do then.
That's right. And spoiler alert, the best way to fail in that escape room is to, after you actually perform the exorcism, to then have him crown you king. You can't do that. You got to say, hey, you just go and you chill out there, brother, because my time has not yet come.
Right. And that would also ruin it for others. If he goes and tells other people that he doesn't have the demon anymore, well, they're not going to want to play the escape room. They're like, ugh, I can't believe that I missed it. You know, it's sort of a single use thing. So, you know, depending on our stock of possessed individuals, I don't know how much of a backlog we'll have. And we got to kind of manage that, you know, that stable, if you will, before we switch over to the actors, because we really want it to be realistic. We don't want any of this fakery going on.
And same as how whenever we pick up the Bible and read it, it's kind of like we get thrown into some portal, like we're just plopped into some new storyline based on whatever our Bible reading plan has us reading. That's kind of like how this haunted house is. You go from one place to the other, and it's like you're in a portal into a whole different story, a whole different dimension. You finish in the escape room, and then you find yourself in Bethel or New Babylon, and then it turns into a gateway to hell. Bam. You go through another hallway, and now you're in a portal, and suddenly you're in the conquest of the promised land, and Joshua's bearing down on you, ready to annihilate you because you're on the wrong end of history.
That would keep me up at night a little bit, you know. One of the things we do like to do, though, is to really bring out the holiness of God as being one of the scariest things in the Bible as well. I think that in our contemporary kind of do what you want, find your own truth kind of way, we often miss that some of the places where people get real messed up is when they try to go into a holy place and haven't gotten all prayed up before they do that. So I'm thinking specifically of the Holy of Holies and trying to look at the Ark of the Covenant. There's a couple of dangers there that we replicate in our haunted house.
Oh, yeah. We certainly do tie a rope around someone's foot before they go into that Holy of Holies, lest they get vaporized for blaspheming around there. There could also be a face melting if you open up the Ark in the wrong way.
Like those poor, unfortunate fellows from Raiders of the Lost Ark. Most people don't know that's, at that point, stock footage from a documentary from when they actually found this thing. And just kind of like they sent the Ark in that donkey-led cart with no people around it into the Philistine camp. This is something similar where folks found the Ark and they had to find some animals or another just to put it back again, because every human that was trying to go up against it just got their face melted.
So it's dangerous business, you know, and I think in every haunted house in the secular type, you do have to sign a waiver. And in a similar way, we want people to know what they're getting into. And it is kind of a way to kind of separate the goats from the sheep, if you will. Someone getting vaporized, we know, well, they're probably living in sin. And it's a great victory for those that can make it into the Holy of Holies and offer up a prayer.
Hmm. You know, one thing you mentioned is something we're going to elaborate on a little bit, which is there's a secular seance where, you know, you just summon some dearly departed great aunt who for sure would have loved your new boyfriend or approved of your divorce from him or your trip around the world is to eat as much as you want and find yourself again, whatever. But like a real seance, a biblical seance, one I might call a save-ance, is when you summon the prophet Samuel back from the bosom of Abraham, and he just roasts you. He just lets you have it. I don't know, that's a real highlight of 1 Samuel towards the end of the book there, is you didn't know that could work, and then you get this witch. You know, newsflash, Bible's got witches. Bible's got witches from Endor. Newsflash, didn't know there was going to be a Star Wars reference in the Bible.
Amen.
It's full of surprises. It's full of surprises. When you summon that prophet, he is going to give you painfully specific judgments and predictions of doom because, man, they hate being summoned from the bosom of Abraham because that's like being, saying like, you know, back into duty, out of retirement. And these guys aren't like special forces or something where they're just hoping somebody's going to call them out of retirement. They hate it. Because they're partying with Abraham.
It's right. It's not like to go back to Star Wars when Obi-Wan Kenobi would just come out and tell Luke something, and it was kind of his initiative. This is like, whoa, why'd you bring me out? Why'd you call me in the middle of the night type of thing? What are you doing knocking on my door? Can't you see I'm still in my boxers and my tank top, and I don't want to be talking to you right now? You know, when you mention the Witch of Endor, it makes me wonder, maybe that's how them Ewoks got made, is that witch cast a spell on a bunch of bears and made them into midget bears. But anyway, I transgress. This save-ance is really, I think, the highlight, the true climax, if you will, of this Christian haunted house.
You know, one more thing. I haven't told you about this yet, so hold on to your hat.
Oh, man, this is for 2024, everybody.
This is for 2024. I haven't told you, but the scariest of all, and I want your feedback on this, because I'm not confident yet that I've got it all sorted out, but the scariest of all skeletons would be the skeleton of Jesus.
Amen.
Because if Jesus were not raised, our preaching is worthless and so is your faith. That's what it says in 1 Corinthians 15. Once we put you into that valley of doubt and you're seeing a skeleton and there's a nameplate that says Jesus, and so you're like, uh-oh, is everything over here? Is my faith worthless? Then we put a little jump cut into dramatic orchestra chord music, shine a little spotlight right on that nameplate of the skeleton, and the nameplate of the skeleton kind of gets a little more uncovered. It kind of screeches and scritches along until it doesn't just say Jesus. It says something like Jesus Ramirez, and you think, oh, it's just an immigrant who died trying to save his family from destitution and organized crime. What a relief.
You know, I like this on so many levels. I think a skeleton Jesus is a really deep thought. It's going to cause people to think. My first thought is it actually is biblical, because we know that when Jesus was tempted in the wilderness for 40 days, he did not eat, therefore rendering himself skeletal. And so that it is a snapshot of a period in the gospel narrative. And so for that reason, I think it is a testimony to his fight against temptation. And if you want to truly fight against temptation, you need to yourself turn into a skeleton. But I like that at the end, that kind of twist that you made about the Jesus Ramirez. That's a nice touch.
Well, and not to mention, now that you're talking about bringing in some of this big book energy and perspective, the Messiah is not to have any of his bones broken. So it is perfectly logical to say, given the resurrection and that prophecy about Jesus not getting any broken bones, that his bones are all still there. And so a skeleton is just sort of like an x-ray of Jesus's current resurrected, still human body.
A skeleton is a hard thing to find, because most people have had a couple of broken bones in their life. But imagine that pure skeleton that Jesus would have, probably the most perfect skeleton that's ever been made.
And that's something that we can aspire to. As we do things to improve our own skeleton to make sure it's up to snuff when we pass and are awaiting the resurrection and somebody comes across our shallow grave, we want that skeleton to look good, to perhaps even be mistaken for the skeleton of Jesus, because we've been imitating his ways, his exercise routine, you know, his intake of dairy products, goat milk and so forth. We want to have a skeleton like unto the Lord. Well, folks, it has been a long time since we've done Holy Ghosted as a segment. Lots of unanswered prayers in the meantime, but we kind of been taking those lumps and sort of absorbing those into our growth through suffering towards perseverance. But given that it's Halloween time, we thought, how much better to talk about haunting than a haunting by the Holy Ghost? And trying to figure out, why aren't your prayers being answered? We're going to answer some of those unanswered prayers today and maybe even address some of our own unanswered prayers along the way.
That's right. There's a lot of unanswered prayers that we interact with on a regular basis. And so we've collected some of the better ones today to just kind of explore that, because prayer is very mysterious. And our unanswered prayers could be an indication of something else that's going on.
Yeah, so first unanswered prayer of the day that we want to look at is actually something we've seen so many times that we're not even going to be able to reference a specific listener who brought this to our attention. And you know what? We also learned that it's one that Rudy and I have also been praying unsuccessfully. And the shape of that prayer basically goes like this: now that Taylor Swift is single, won't she go out with me? And then every time that happens, it's just like some other celebrity, Travis Kelce, Ed Sheeran, or his friend or something. I don't remember anything about that, but some other celebrity or celebrity adjacent person is who actually gets to date Taylor Swift. Why does that keep happening in spite of our prayers?
Right, there's been so many prayers offered to be able to date her or be in really a more of a holy relationship with her, finally marry her, and it appears that no one who's actually been dating her has actually been doing so on account of their prayers. Now, I'll admit Travis Kelce is a great football player, but I don't believe that he's been praying this way. I think he was able to get her to date him with some little trick with a friendship bracelet, something after a show, and I think she might have confused him with someone else, but then found out he actually was a star athlete, and then the rest of the world also found out that he was a star athlete. But it's a prayer, and I'll just say it. I'll be open and authentic right now that I have prayed, because I've always imagined what it would be like for our ministry if one of us was able to at least date Taylor Swift. I can see how convenient it would be if she did a little residency in Las Vegas, you know, and we'd go watch her shows, or she'd come watch us across Vegas and doing our thing, or sit next to us during the podcast and just watch, not even have to say anything.
It's the ultimate co-branding, as the NFL is discovering right now. They got there's like a trillion new people watching American football than ever did before, because they just think they might get that, you know, that little screenshot of the box seat with one famous fan cheering on their team, which just became their team like an hour or two before when Thursday Night Football started. So that's what, you know, we're trying to think about the Lord's work here, and not just our own, and how broadly that message could go out if it had a little more celebrity endorsement from time to time.
I feel like one thing she's doing, though, in this situation is this is helping to build her fan base even more. With everyone in the NFL is now her fan, and everyone who's a fan of the NFL is now her fan that wasn't before, which is leading to this crescendo such that when it is time for her to date one of us, she'll be even more popular, more influential. So I kind of see the Lord's working in the meantime.
Yeah, your faith, Rudy, is always is very inspiring and impressive to me, even though I want me to be the one who gets the prize of these prayers. But, I was just thinking about this, like, in faith, we want to be like that tree that's planted next to the flowing water of the Las Vegas Wash, struggling through a crack in the concrete, undoing years of careful planning and investment, testifying in a Jurassic Park-like way to the vitality of our manly evangelical will to power. And that's the type of prayers that you've been praying. Just the unfortunate part is we've both been praying them together, and bring it back around to some Holy Ghost here. The Holy Ghostbusters, I mean, it's when you got a couple of guys praying for the same thing that you start to cross those streams. You start to cause that interdimensional chaos that Dan Aykroyd so eloquently warned us against. And that's what I think is going on here. People are looking for the reason why their prayers are not getting answered. And it really is that crossing the streams from the plasma, you know, spirit encasing whip gun things that they got going on in Ghostbusters.
That's true. It's a Holy Ghost block right there. It's kind of, crossing them streams. Wow, that's very deep. And I know that the only way you could have really received that is through your own prayer life. And I respect that tremendously.
Yeah, I think one practical takeaway is got to make sure you're not praying any prayers opposed to anybody else, or really all you can control is your own actions in this. So you should probably just declare, here's what I'm praying. Please don't anybody pray against it. So, here's the guy I want to win the election. Please don't anybody pray against that. Here's, the person I want to marry. Please don't anybody pray against that. And it's kind of like when you, put on Facebook all the baby names you want to use and implicitly, but nonetheless, very strongly, forbid all your friends from using them for naming their babies. It's kind of like that. Just put it out there. The responsibility then becomes your friends to avoid all 25 of those names and at least those specific spellings. And that's what we got to start doing, I think, with prayer now that we have the power of social media.
Oh, absolutely. That's really good thinking right there. I like how you brought that all together.
Well, one little bonus here, not related to whether these prayers are getting answered, but I just read, this is hot off the computer screen right here. We all know the enormous Jesus that lives in Brazil near Rio de Janeiro called Cristo Redentor. It's a statue. It's really an inspiration to us across Vegas because it's like the biggest, boldest Jesus in the world.
It shows the multiculturalness of Jesus, the Brazilian Jesus, which we appreciate. Oh,
yeah. It is the largest and most lifelike post-resurrection Jesus statue that you ever seen. He's got the holes in his hands and feet, but he is outrageously enormous. But in any case, just the other day, they have started projecting onto Jesus a Taylor Swift t-shirt. And I don't know about you, but that to me is such a witness because it lets me know that Jesus also cares about what's popular in the world right now. He's kind of like your cool celibate homeless uncle who somehow scored Eras Tour VIP passes for you and the billions of other adherents to the world's current number one religion, which is Swiftieism. And, maybe the number two current and undisputed lifetime achievement award-winning religion, Christianity, can get the Swift lift to go alongside its Trump bump in getting our popularity back to where it deserves to be.
Wow, what a prophetic sight as I'm looking at this image right now. I mean, that's the kind of thing where we know that she is in the palm of his hand, and even more so, she's right there on his t-shirt.
You know, something that's come across our wires, it's been letting the Las Vegans down. It's actually a big downer around town here, is the outcome of the World Series. I don't think there's anyone outside of the state of Arizona who wanted the outcome to happen as it was. There's a lot of prayers, you know, for the Astros and Phillies in Las Vegas, because that's where the smart money was. And people are stressing out about this. Why weren't my prayers answered?
I think most of the pessimists believe that the Mafia was going to make it like that to have larger markets in the World Series, number one. And number two, obviously the outcome wasn't what the two of us really had been praying for.
It is stressful, Brother Rudy, and you'll recall this, you know, stress as we were wandering through town and we're hanging outside the windows of that B-dubs watching Game 5. But it's stressful when you're watching baseball playoffs and you've got money on the games and you don't even know whether or not the teams are trying to cheat.
It was hard for us in that situation because we couldn't actually hear what was going on in the game. We're just desperately trying to read the little closed captioning on those screens. So that was an indication, like, we couldn't hear the trash cans being pounded on to let them know that it was going to be an off-speed pitch instead of a fastball.
That does remind me of something, which is just the whole issue of stealing signs. Like, people are booing current and former Astros players all the time over this. But there's a positive sign stealing that you can do that I've been thinking of. Rudy, you ever stolen any signs?
Oh, I've certainly stolen some signs. Now, we had to steal a couple of signs to keep people from parking on our lot or parking adjacent to our lot. But in the baseball and the football sense, I believe that although I didn't have the athleticism to be an elite athlete, I was a great service to my team because I felt like in the spirit and prophetically, I could steal the signs of the opposing team.
There is no limit to the value that the spirit brings into those practical situations. Like, you're on a trip, nobody speaks Spanish, and you're like, I will speak in tongues to this dude and see where we're going, get directions from him, and everyone gets a good laugh out of that. But the sign stealing I was thinking of was, you know, I done a little bit of this, stealing yard signs for candidates out of other people's yards and replacing them with something of equal or greater value, like for the other candidate, my preferred candidate. And I see that as a win for everyone, because, like, think of how much better off you'll be if our guy wins and it looks like you've been a loyal supporter the whole time. Like, the goon squads are just going to go right past your house and get your neighbor whose sign I didn't steal.
Okay, everyone, here's one of our crowd pleasers, the Turnt or Burnt segment here, where we look at some hot topics going on in the world right now, and we decide if they are turnt or burnt. First one on the list, a show called Stars on Mars. TJ, what do you think about Stars on Mars, turnt or burnt?
Well, first thought was burnt, because a star would burn up a planet to bits before it grew a single vegetable, you know, to sustain human life there. And I was just thinking to myself, aren't they even teaching astrology in high school anymore? But then I watched a couple episodes. I think I get it. You know, you're bringing together a bunch of celebrities and give them a challenge. But main part of why this is burnt for me still is it just exemplifies and heightens people's awareness of labor strikes in the Writers Guild of America, because, boy, you just got reality stars starring as reality stars here, and you get kind of a shambles.
That's a really good point. I think this is the fruit of that strike. I think it's turnt just because it really inspired me to start thinking of my own shows and praying against the or playing for the strike to continue and against the movie stars. all you need is a good idea and a funny little rhyming name for it, and you got yourself a show. One I'd like to put out there is one I made up recently called Stacks on Racks, in which contestants try to stack up dollar bills onto a clothing rack, one of those circular clothing racks. It's hard to do, but if you can get one to a certain height, then you win the money. And we could get some C-listers and reality stars on there. So Stacks on Racks, that's my thing I'm going to be putting out there if that strike ever gets some more, heats up again.
Well, bringing those anarcho-syndicalists to their knees is something that we both got an interest in here. But yeah, I agree. Make lemonade stand out of those lemons and get a couple of bucks here. So I'm willing to see your side there. And one possible factor here, also trying to make some progress in a bad situation, is why don't we bring our planet's successful experience with man-made climate change to a place that really needs it, like a whole new planet where it hasn't rained for centuries? I think that's a worthy exporting of one of our principal successful products here as Earthlings.
Oh, amen. Love that.
Next up on Turnt, we have a verdict in the trial of Samuel Bankman-Fried, the former founder person, starter person, startup guy from the FTX crypto exchange. He's been found guilty of all charges related to his financial crimes and frauds related to the FTX collapse. Is this turnt or burnt?
Well, we got the cancel culture at it again with Mr. Bankman-Fried. First of all, I think that's a great self-gloss. I mean, Bankman, very literal, on the nose. I mean, I'm thinking like I need to change my legal name from Rudy Rodolfo Bigliani to Rudy Ro Bible Bro Big Salami. But anyway, Bankman-Fried, I've looked at this case from every direction. I don't see any problem. I don't see any crime committed other than just not letting the Bankman allow his investments to mature and then being able to let the earnings trickle down the pyramid. I think it's a total witch trial. Last year, they arrested him while he was just minding his own business in the Bahamas. This scares me because of the direction of the justice system and society. I think this is totally, I think what's happened to him is burnt, but I think the man is completely turnt.
Yeah, I'm worried because we're celebrities of a sort and we're pushing our own crypto. So that's kind of a warning shot from that cancel culture at the Federal Trade Commission and Securities and Exchange Commission. Those woke institutions might come after us too. But one of the reasons I think it's burnt is that we got all these celebrities who lost money on the exchange. Tom Brady, you know, Steph Curry, Big Papi Ortiz, Kevin O'Leary, and Gisele Bündchen. Well, if you are one of these celebrities affected, I am volunteering my shoulder to cry, and obviously to Gisele, but also to Steph Curry. All you need to do is get me a courtside ticket, season passes, wherever you play. I don't know, the Golden State's not too far from here. And every time you run down the court with the ball, I am happy to be there, ready to give you a hug, or kind of reach out to give you a hug, whether or not I know you want one as you go by, just as a sign of support. All right, next up on Turnt or Burnt, there's a new AI from Elon Musk. It's called Grok, or it's called X.AI. I don't know. Grok-sakai. But one way or another, there's a new AI. It's from Elon Musk. It's built on Twitter. And best of all about this one, it can do middle school math better than ChatGPT. And that is the most critical factor in selecting a chatbot that I use. I can't stand calculators. There's no chance of having a trust building relationship with a calculator like there is with a chatbot.
Oh, that's so true. Yeah, that's the first level is can it do calculations like on a calculator? And then the second one is does it know how to stack things? And those are the two best things that we know how to judge the efficacy of the AI.
Well, what do you think here? Is Grok turnt or burnt? I should have said this earlier in case people don't know. It's It's a chatbot that's full of Twitter. Whatever Twitter's full of, it's full of it. Spite and vinegar. It's got a bit of wit and a rebellious streak. Those are the quotes from all the news outlets about this one. Is that good or bad?
You know, first of all, I applaud the creativity with the name. Naming it after that little tree guy from that Marvel movie. The little tree guy that all he says is, "I am Grok." And I thought that's pretty cool. Because everybody loves that little tree guy. But it doesn't say much. And I think that kind of is ironic because we want this bot to be saying a lot of stuff. A lot of hashtagging. A lot of Throwback Thursdays. So it'll learn. And it, so it's like, what if that little tree guy from that Marvel movie had learned from a computer how to speak more than just one sentence? I think we can certainly utilize it. I'm once again offended that Elon Musk didn't come to us, because we have, with the praise bots, really made some great leaps, I think, in this whole technology. Maybe he could have gotten a head start on this if he just would have utilized what the work that we'd already done. I'm offended, but I'm going to have to say it's turnt.
I'm in your same boat there. I mean, it's got lots of puns. It's real boomery. It's not PC at all. It's just doing what we do, doing what our praise bots do. But, you know, sometimes you earn money from your intellectual property, and sometimes your intellectual property influences the culture, and people start imitating it. People start making their own money off of it. So I'm going to take it as a compliment. My real question is, I'm going to try this out later. Can it finally, after all this time, generate some real proof of election fraud? That's going to be my standard as to whether this is a better chatbot than the other ones. I keep on asking, where's the proof? Where's the proof? Spell out the proof in a way that a fifth grader could understand. Spell out the proof in a way a first grader could understand. Spell out the proof in a way I could understand. And so far, none of these chatbots can do that.
That's true, and I hope that it could maybe in a couple of 2 or 3 years get to the level that it could not only spot the election fraud, but it could be the arbiter for some of these accounts that get deleted illegally and unjustly.
All right, last up on Turn to Burnt for today, there's a new show in town. It's made of many billions of LED lights. And it's kind of an Eye of Sauron. If the Eye of Sauron kind of fell off the top of that tower and got embedded in the swamp and just kind of looks up now. But it's the Las Vegas Sphere. Is this turned or burnt?
Wow. Well, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. I'm so glad, first of all, that it exists here in our great city of Las Vegas, our hometown. I do certainly give them a lot of props for the risk that they took in doing this. I was reading something in the newspaper about a $2.3 billion project, and in the past quarter it lost $98 million. So you do the math on that, I'll do the Alfredo. That's a huge investment, and that's the kind of stones that we like to see. Respect on that, first of all. I do like how they kicked it off with that one Irish praise band called U2. That was kind of cool. I think some have wondered what's the purpose of it, other than a flashy thing on the outside. And for that very reason, I feel like a connection with this thing, as it resonates with Cross Vegas. You know, it's like we're trying to draw people in with our light. I only wish we could have secured it on our property and gotten the CEO saved and then have it used for our ministry. I think it's certainly turned, but once again, I'm going to have to throw in that, should have been there earlier, and maybe we didn't play our cards right to get that thing on our property.
Well, I too love the risk taken. That's very Las Vegas. And we hear from amongst our friends and associates here, you know, fool me once, fool me twice, fool me thrice, I'm still throwing dice. Something that maybe will help us determine the ultimate degree of turntitude here. We got to talk to Dusty about this. But is it in the ground looking up because it's looking for UFOs? Is it one of our first new lines of defense? You know, we talked about how that firewall's broken down, that prayer wall has broken down against the UFOs, and maybe this is an investment back in that ability to spy on the UFOs instead of the other way around. It's no coincidence that U2 is named after this famous spy plane against the Russians, and I believe that's signaled by the makers of the Sphere that they are putting the, as you say, kind of Irish Catholic Christian viewpoint on the heavens, looking up, because it's not looking at all of us. It's not a synopticon finding our sins. It's looking up into the sky where, you know, there's relatively few sins up there, sometimes referred to as the heavens. But is it looking for UFOs? And will those LEDs concentrate into a laser beam to shoot them down?
Wow, I really like how you take it to the next level. And you think real seriously about the bigger picture. You know, here I am playing checkers and you're playing Minesweeper. And so I really like that about you. You know, we've been talking about a lot of things that have been passing through the skies. If that Chinese balloon had passed by there, would they have been able to consolidate all those LEDs into a laser beam and just blast that thing, just vaporize that thing right out of the sky? Wow, I mean, this takes it up to such another turnt level. I think you're really onto something. I suppose the Space Force probably doesn't want us to be knowing about that, but I think it is our right to know about that.
Well, maybe every time we go by, you know, is admitted right in the neighborhood. Got to see those home values shoot right up, right? But as we walk by, we can just give them a little nod and a wink and say, yep, look to the skies.
Yep, we know what you're doing and we like it.
All right, folks, you have spent another hour of your life, which you can never retrieve, with your favorite podcast team. Rudy, read us out on something here.
Friends, love you. Appreciate you. We are here because you want us to be here. We are here because in faith you have elected us to be here, and we are so thankful for that. We're coming to you live from the city of Las Vegas, the Big Red, and we'll see you again next time.